Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 626. It's the 1st of November, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals, HZM, talks about today's proposed placing to raise £9 million to fund the preparation of the definitive feasibility study for the company's 100% owned Araguaia nickel project in Brazil. Also on the podcast, I have Stuart Bladen, CEO of Phalanx Group, FLX ticker, talking about the interim results. Plus, I also have George Roach, CEO of Premier African Minerals, that's PREM ticker, gives an update on the following projects, RHA, Zulu and TCT. Of course, I've also got the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours, plus the top five most liked RNSs this morning, and today's suggested one for your watch list has been suggested by Harry, and the company is Clough Natural Resources, CLNR. And I'll get to the reason why Harry thinks you should add this to your watch list in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. That's HZM ticker. Jeremy, thanks for coming back on.
Justin, good morning. Good to be here today.
Yeah, well, listen, we've chatted a few times in the past. I think not since the summer, though, I think, the last time we chatted. And a lot has happened since. So for people who didn't hear that podcast and for new listeners to the podcast, can you give us a summary as to what Horizonte is all about, please, Jeremy?
Absolutely. We're focused in Brazil. We're developing the Araguaia nickel project. If you recall, Q4 last year into Q1 this year, we acquired the Glencore nickel project, which is adjacent to us in the north of our area. A fairly sort of game-changing transaction for us. The asset was valued somewhere around $450 million in the Xstrata-Glencore merger. $75 million of project spend, and we were able to acquire it for $8 million US with no cash consideration up front. So we closed that transaction in Q1 this year. We integrated our existing asset with the Glencore project, and 3 weeks ago we released a new pre-feasibility study. So it's been a pretty busy time for us, and obviously today we announced a funding.
Yeah, well, we're going to the funding, but first of all, like I said, we've missed the we didn't have an update on the pre-feasibility study. So let's go through some of the figures there you've come out with in the pre-feasibility study, please, Jeremy.
Yeah, perfect. If we look at the numbers, the results from the pre-feasibility study, we had quite a bit of internal debate and external benchmarking about what was the right mid-term nickel price to use. And if you look at most of the major banks in London and Toronto, they're using a mid-term nickel price of around $14,000 a ton. We wanted to be conservative, so we've used $12,000 a ton for our mid-term price range. And if you take the numbers at that level, we've got a $320 million net present value, a 19% IRR. Key number is the cost of production, and that will be down at $3.15 a pound, which is right at the lower end of the global cost curve. After payback of capital and taxes, it generates $1.3 billion of free cash flow over life of mine. But I think most important, if you take today's nickel price, which is $10,500, the project is positive. It's got about $140 million NPV, a 14% IRR, and it generates about $50 million of profit a year. And there's very few nickel projects out there today that can do that. So it was a pretty robust set of numbers, and we're very pleased with them.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw as well, which always has an influence on sort of metals and all that. China's figures out today, manufacturing the best for 2 years, or growing at the fastest pace in 2 years. So that should help, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I think there's three key takeaways on the nickel space at the moment. Number one, at the current nickel price of $10,500 a ton, around 40 to 50% of all nickel that's produced today is sub-economic, so that's not sustainable. Number two, as you say, driven on those numbers today out of China, demand is running at about 2.5% to 3% a year on nickel, and stainless steel is running somewhere 6% to 8% a year. So there is robust demand out there. Supply side, we've seen a number of operations come offline. The big sort of elephant in the room was this buildup of metal on the LME and SHFE exchanges. Last year we saw that balanced, and this year we're going to see a 100,000 ton a year deficit. And the final point is, if you look out there globally, there are very few quality next generation nickel projects that are ready to come online in the next kind of 3 years. So for all those three factors, we think the nickel market's going to be very, very interesting from now going forwards over the next 3 years. And I think we'll see price increases as we go forwards.
Yeah, well, that buy you had from Glencore there, it's starting to seem like a bit of a steal, isn't it?
I think it was a logical transaction to consolidate the two projects. And what's come out of it is one of the largest, highest grade, undeveloped saprolite nickel projects globally. So we are now kind of in a leading position. And yes, that transaction was all part of that story and evolution. But I think it's important. This story has come from a grassroots discovery made by us in 2010. And now we're ready to start a feasibility study. So it's come a long way, and it really is a quality asset today.
Yeah, well, do you know what? When I'm doing research myself for companies, I use an acronym called CASH, and the C stands for cash, and we'll get to that in a bit, but the A stands for assets, and, you are like, what, a 15.7 million market cap at the moment, and you've pretty much got a tier one asset there, which is always good. So let's get on to the cash bit. So today you've announced you're going to raise some money, so tell us how much and what's it going to be used for?
Yeah, we're raising 9 million. We've got strong support from existing shareholders. We've got three new institutions coming on board for that. And we've also got strong support out of Canada. So we're very pleased with this result. We've announced that today. We've got a general meeting, and that should close towards the end of the month. We've also got money in the company. So today we've got a robust cash position. That will go into delivering a definitive feasibility study on the project. Work will start on that later this year. And the aim is that we deliver that at the end of next year. And in parallel, we deliver the installation license that allows us to start construction. So at the end of next year, the aim is that this project is ready to start construction subject to securing finance. So it's very exciting for us.
Excellent stuff. So that's so basically a time frame over a year there. And when will this, I'm just looking at the date there on the announcement. So it's going through proposed at the moment, but it'll be going through when? In November 27, was it? Did I see that?
Yeah, 29th of November. And yeah, then effectively that's closed. So it's just standard GM practice, and off we go.
Excellent stuff. So in your mind, Jeremy, once this is through and you've got the money, what's the next thing you were talking about there? Is it the feasibility study?
I think there's a lot of work streams going on. We've obviously got a very large land package. We control the whole district. We're obviously in a mining region. So we will be stepping out and looking at additional targets that we've got to see if we can increase our resource numbers on the exploration side. So we're going to see growth there. And then obviously moving into the feasibility, we're going to have trial mining. We're going to have detailed design work around the plant, and there'll be a whole raft of fairly chunky news flow going forward. So we see this as being a very active period over the next 12 months for the company.
Yeah, and do you sense, though, I mean, the nickel market, going back, it's almost like a year, a couple of years, do you sense a change in sentiment slowly happening now?
I think it's a very exciting time. I mean, we started the year in January at $7,500 a ton, which was a 15-year low. We've come up to where we sit today at 10.5. We're still at multi-year lows. And for all those factors I talked about, I think everything is poised to see an upwards movement in price. I think we will see at a point next year $12,000 a ton. And it's very good for us. In the range that we operate at, we make good money at 12,000. We make very good money at 14. So we're very happy to operate in that $12,000 to $14,000 a ton nickel price range. But even at 14,000, it doesn't incentivize much new nickel to come on. So it's a very good position for us to be. There's quite a neat graph on our presentation, which shows nickel price since 2000. And when nickel moves, it doesn't just move 40-50%, it moves 200-300%. And I think we are right at the sort of inflection point where we're going to start to see nickel climbing going forwards. And I say, if you look across what the banks are saying, there's any numbers out there from $14,000 to $19,000 a ton. And it's worth noting that sort of the 20-year historic price looking back from today is somewhere around $16,000 to $17,000 a ton. So at those levels, our project has got over 800 million of NPV, and it pays itself back in just over a year. So massive gearing to nickel.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at your presentation there on the website, and all the, like I said, all the big banks are suggesting prices way above where you've pitched it at. So it's good news for your project there. Okay, Gerald, listen. You know, like I said, you've got the cash, you've got the assets there, and if anyone needs any more convincing, could you give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your Vox Markets page, please?
Absolutely. At our share price range today, we're trading at a five-year low. Nickel prices at multi-year lows. I think the entry downside for anybody coming in today is relatively limited. We're trading at around 1 cent per pound of nickel in the ground today. If you look at sort of recent transactions where assets have been taken through to feasibility and acquired, they range anywhere from 10 to 30 cents per pound of nickel in the ground. So again, massive upside. And we're very well aligned in terms of our milestones over the next 18 months to 24 months with where the nickel market's going. And I think you're going to see significant increase in this asset base going forwards.
Marvellous. Jeremy, I love it to chat to you. I've got to remind people, if you do hit follow there on HZM, then you'll get RNSs delivered straight to the front screen of your phone whenever the guys there release them. Jeremy, lovely to speak to you. And I look forward to following the story as it goes forward.
Excellent. Look forward to keeping you updated. Many thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stuart Bladen, CEO of Phalanx Group. That's ticker FLX. Stuart, thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. It's a pleasure again to be with you.
Yeah, well, you've had some interims out and it's looking quite good. Before we get to that, Stuart, I always like to do this for new people listening and for people who don't know about Phalanx. Can you give us a summary as to what Phalanx is all about, please?
Yeah, sure. So Phalanx Group is an AIM-listed security and intelligence provider. We're based in London, and we've got a world-leading team of security professionals, technology and intelligence experts who work together in close partnership with our clients to help them defend against a wide range of global security threats. So that's us, Justin.
Yeah, and of course, it's quite a hot sector, and it's becoming ever more so as people sort of migrate their entire lifestyle online. It's I saw a report out today, actually, via the BBC, saying the government is going to spend $1.9 billion on their cybersecurity strategy. So, you know, it's all tied in here, so it's good news for you, I suppose. And you've had your interim results out for the 6 months ended the 30th of September. So can you take us through some of the highlights here, please, Stuart?
Yes, I should start really with the government announcement, because I really think that that frames up where we are. They plan to spend that $1.9 billion going after cyber criminals, to train new talent and to recruit about 50 new cybersecurity professionals at the National Crime Agency. And I think there's two things to say about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the first is complimentary. I really do welcome the government's leadership here. They've highlighted the key issues, the staff shortages, they've set up an innovation fund, and they've put a good dollop of money where their mouth is, and that's well done. But the second, sadly, it's a drop in the ocean. It's estimated that globally criminals will be ripping off global consumers by around about £4 trillion in 2021. So we can't just leave it to the government. Every business leader, every small business owner, every board member in the country needs to go into their office today to ask what their organization is doing. Are you protecting your company, your staff, and your clients? Don't be put off by all the buzzwords. The basics aren't hard, and there are guides online. And if you're not sure, you should ask for a review or external help. Because in the cyber war, we're all going to have to log on for Britain.
Yeah, and do you know what? When I saw that announcement by the government, the first thing that came to mind is, well, like you said, it's very good. But then I thought, they're playing catch-up here because, you know, the government wouldn't choose to allocate this kind of money unless there was an issue, you know? I mean, as we know, governments, you know, are trying to keep a tight rein on their purses. And it's like everything else. People only sort of pay attention to this when they're affected. And almost it's like being, you know, I mean, your house burgled. People start putting alarms in their houses after it happens. So I think, why wait until that happens? We know, you know, the likelihood is going to happen. So do it now before it happens. Isn't that the case?
That's absolutely right. It's becoming, you know, increasingly clear that governments, organisations that you work with, want to know that they're safe to work with you, that you're going to look after their information. So it's increasingly becoming an important cost of business. I think it's very easy to say that the government's catching up. I think the truth is that we are all catching up. The criminals have stolen a march on us. So rather than being critical of the government, I welcome what they've done, and I just ask all your listeners and remind them they need to do something too.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's go to the interim results. And what are the highlights here, Stuart? What do you like to point out about this?
Yeah, sure. So we've published some really strong interim results today, and I think we're standing a little taller as a result. Our revenue is 54% up, and at the same time, we actually reduced our absolute costs. Together, those have made a really significant difference to our bottom line since last autumn. The acquisition of ASC has gone well. We've broadened our portfolio, and Jay Abbott and the team have delivered a really significant new revenue and savings within the cyber group. And Tim Williams and the intelligence team have driven a 15% increase in revenue organically on this time last year. Since the end of the half, we've continued to make really good progress. We've had an unsolicited share subscription. We've paid off our outstanding loan, so we're debt-free. And we've also appointed a new joint broker, Whitman Howard Limited. So together, it's been a really good first half. And given that our share price is up some 65% in the last few weeks, it feels like we've got some real momentum.
Yeah, like I said, I think people saw this happening because in the last announcement, you say you're, trying to cut back on costs there, and also in the meantime, revenue's going up. So that's, it's good from both sides of the balance sheet, I suppose. And going forward, is it more of this? What are you looking at, Steve?
Yeah, sure. Let me just touch on the cost and cash management because I think it's really important. We've had a really, really strong focus on both costs and cash this year. I mean, to actually increase revenue and reduce overall cost at the same time, honestly, that doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. We've been pretty ruthless about taking out unnecessary expense. We've literally halved our admin costs since last year, and the cyber team have also made great strides in lowering the unit costs in our security operations center. And the combined result has been great, a 54% increase in revenue and a 12% decrease in overall costs.
Yeah, now some people may say, surely if you're growing there, will this cost impact your growth going forward or not?
Yeah, so we've always planned for significant growth in the second half of this year, and I'm pleased that we're still currently on track for that. We're opening a new security operations centre in Birmingham next month, and that will both increase our capacity and further lower unit costs. We've kicked off a significant hiring programme to meet organic demand from clients, and our cyber pipeline looks particularly strong in financial services. So I'm pretty happy at the moment because our cost and cash control means that we've got a strong cash position and we can fund all that H2 planned investment ourselves.
Marvellous stuff. Well, like I said, you are in an area that's growing, and more and more people are catching on to the fact how important cybersecurity is, even if it's a little bit too late for some people. It's never too late, but it's we do these things. Like I said, we'll buy new alarms for our house after it's been burgled. So that's the way humans are, I suppose,
Yes, so I'd encourage everyone to buy their alarms before they're burgled. It saves money.
Yeah. Okay, so listen, we have a big follow button on your page at Vox Markets, and every day on the podcast I cover the top five most followed companies. So can you give me three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, and therefore they'll get RNSs straight to the front screen of their smartphone, please?
Absolutely. It's that Phalanx have really got momentum. We've had some really good results. We've put in strong cost and cash management, and our investors can expect continued growth from our company.
Yeah, and do you know what? A while back, I was asking around for, does anyone know of any, AIM small companies listed that cover cybersecurity? And there aren't many companies around, and like I said, at a market cap just below 10 million, this real opportunity? Because, like I said, the market is not going to go away, is it?
I think that's right. I mean, I've joined Phalanx only a couple of weeks ago, and I did that because I see this gap in the market for a strong, pure-play cyber and intelligence company. Many of the older cyber startups have been acquired, and newer ones have tended to focus on software, automation, or encryption. But what I believe, what I see, is that clients want service-oriented firms that focus on intelligence and cyber. And because of the shortage of people and the complicated technology, most people are now deciding to buy in rather than do it themselves, which means they're looking to companies like Phalanx to come and help them.
Marvellous, Stuart, lovely to chat to you, and I look forward to speaking to you again in the not-too-distant future.
Justin, great to talk to you and to your listeners.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Roach, CEO of Premier African Minerals, ticker code PREM. George, thanks for joining me.
That's a pleasure indeed, and thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss this with you.
That's all right. Listen, you've got a very popular stock there. Whenever you've been on the podcast before, and people are always glad to hear you talk about the various projects you have going on. I know you have a lot going on there. And so for people who are not aware of Premier African Minerals or people just new to the podcast, can you give a summary, George, of what you're all about there?
Sure. Premier as a company has been around for quite some time now, and our focus has always been on looking at late stage, lower risk exploration projects that we believe we can bring into production relatively quickly and on a low capital basis. And if we take that philosophy into the most active projects that we are concerned with at the moment, and there are several and they are fairly diverse, then it's clear when one looks at those projects that they fit into that mold. We also believe that several of our projects are in their own right company making projects of that kind of potential value. Mm-hmm. The first of the projects that I'm going to talk about will be the RHA tungsten operation in Zimbabwe. And that was a very good example of something that we believe we could bring into production quickly. It had been historically mined over many, many years, first in the 1930s. It was mined extensively during the Second World War on a subsidized basis because tungsten was strategic, off and on until the late 70s, at which time Falcon Bridge had the project and regarded it very highly. The Zimbabwean political declines in the late 70s saw Falcon Bridge leave it, and we were very fortunate to get this with quite a lot of development already in place, good history, and so on. And that pretty well typifies what Premier is and how Premier tries to work. Our very latest acquisition of a controlling interest in TCT in Mozambique, I believe is another good example of a very opportunistic situation that came our way, in that we were looking there at an industrial scale project that had all the infrastructure in place. Normally, the infrastructure tends to come last, especially when you're 30 kilometers south of the Zambezi River and a couple of hundred kilometers inland. But this one here was quite different. It had a railway line running through it and various other things. I hope that gives you a little flavor of the background and what Premier is and where our focus lies.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, before we came on, you mentioned that, so you've got a lot going on, and I advise people to go to the website to see how much you've got going on. And there's also another project that comes up, and I see you mentioned quite a bit, and that's also the Zulu Lithium and Tantalum project there. So can you take us through that as well, please? What's happening there?
Sure, I can. The Zulu pegmatites were identified many years ago, originally by a Rhodesian Selection Trust, who did a little bit of historic drilling. That data we have available. They identified a limited strike length They didn't drill particularly deep. They weren't looking necessarily for depth extensions, but the grades were reasonable. Although the assay work that was done by RST did not digest fully all the lithium that there was, and our subsequent test work has shown that the grades are actually higher than those early reports were. We did some drilling about 5 years ago, looking primarily at depth extension on the pegmatites, and we identified that these things extend to over 200 meters and are open at 200 meters in depth. Substantial surface work has shown us extensions up to, well, they're substantial, at least 3.5 kilometers, and it's really open largely. There's no finite limits that we have at this stage. Decent widths. And we have recently started another drill program at Zulu. We don't have lithium assay results back, but we have been able to do tantalum assays at our own calibrated lab facilities that we have in Zimbabwe at RHA, and to run decent check assays on this. And the tantalum grades that we're seeing are good, and we reported these. These grades exceed some of the other very substantial tantalum lithium developments in Australia, for example. Our grades stand up very well. In fact, they generally are better. So we're quite excited about that. The visible mineralization coming out of the core, and we're now, I think we're into the eighth or ninth hole at the moment. Every hole, we're seeing mineralization as we expected, as we'd modeled. We have extensive modeling of this deposit now, from the surface, from the historic drilling, and so on. So we're able to drill in a pretty focused and targeted manner. We expect to see mineralization in the holes, in all the holes, as we go ahead. We're seeing what we expected to see. There's some very substantial intersections, some of which I've reported already, and we look forward very much to seeing the actual lithium analyses come out. Hopefully they're going to be as exciting as the tantalum that we've already seen. On that basis, the Zulu pegmatites have the potential to be to stand up to what Zimbabwe regards, what the Mines Department and others in Zimbabwe regard as the biggest undeveloped lithium-bearing pegmatites in Zimbabwe. And I think that's where this is going to go. I think it's an extremely exciting project.
Okay. When do you expect the sort of results from those first assays there?
On the first of the lithium results at any moment.
Okay.
That's due very soon. They're already in the labs, and we're moving them in as quickly as we can. We do most of our own sample prep at site. We're able to do that. Exporting of samples from Zimbabwe is quite a substantial exercise, but even that we've managed to streamline.
Okay. All right. And as far as the RHA getting that production back into profitability, what kind of time frame are you looking at there?
Well, getting RH, when I just want to step back for a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
When we originally took the decision to go ahead with RHA, the price per metric ton unit of wolframites, tungsten concentrate, or ammonium paratungstate, off which the price of wolframite is bought, was in excess of $400 per metric ton unit. It dropped to below $150 per metric ton unit. So this forced a re-examination of the economics, and also as grade was not necessarily achieved in the open pit operations, we had to go back and have another very careful look at this. We've done extensive testing on the use of X-ray based sorting, and we have a situation where we are anticipating installing an XRF, X-ray-based sorter in the very near future. At the same time, there are some shaft upgrades that are in process at the moment. So we'll be looking later this year to produce both from underground and from a re-establishment of the open pit. And at tonnages, once the X-ray-based sorter is installed and fully commissioned, looking at tonnages that will be approximately five times the original design throughput of the plant. And we can only achieve that because of the efficiency of the sorter. Mm-hmm. So it looks exciting. The work is ongoing. We're all very, very busy sorting out these upgrades and sorting out the main shaft and so on at the moment. And I think that looks quite exciting. So that should move into a profitable situation fairly soon.
Yeah, yeah. And so you've like I said, you've got a lot going on there. So what made you take on the acquisition of TCT?
The TCT acquisition started quite some time ago.
Okay.
It was fortuitous in that the deposit outcrops, you walk all over it, you can see it. Okay. It's extremely easy to map. There has been a little bit of historic exploitation. So it, clearly it is of an acceptable grade. And the surface sampling that we've done has confirmed sufficient calcium carbonate for cement production, as well as solubility for agricultural usage, for agri-lime. And, you know, I think one, just on the agri-lime side, let me say that we're located in an area that has a huge need for lime. It's a high rainfall and reasonably acidic soils. There's a lot of sugarcane being grown in the area, and agricultural opportunities are expanding all the time along that Zambezi Valley. At the moment, agri-lime is all imported. So the potential cement opportunity is there, the agri-lime situation is there, and then of course there's aggregate. And aggregate at the moment is trucked from way inland down to Beira. Whereas we sit on the Tet Beira railway line. It runs adjacent to the property. It has an existing station and siding that is on the boundary of the property, on the boundary of the limestone deposit. As one stands, you can see the main overhead electrification cables that run across the property. It's right on the main north-south EN1 motorway. Not a motorway in Mozambique, but the main north-south route. In fact, you can park on the side of the road and walk into the limestone exploration area. There's an existing forest operation, and it's the forestry company that owns the limestone deposit. So the way to get to the limestone was to buy into the forestry operation. And that brings with it another opportunity, because that forestry operation, with very little effort from our part, stands to make considerable contribution to Premier and to offsetting exploration costs. Mm. So you have a situation here where you have a clear demand for the product that can be produced. You have the infrastructure already in place that normally comes last with these with this kind of project. It's on surface. It's a very easy and quick exploration and mapping exercise that needs to be done. And it will be a very low-cost mining operation. Dressing the product for different end users, and those end users can be anything from producing slaked lime to neutralize what's going on in the Tet area going upline, to producing aggregate and agri-lime going downline, or limestone for the cement industry going downline towards Beira, where there are two cement factories. All of these opportunities sit there. Plus, as I say, the mitigating factors of reduced exploration risk, because there at the same time is a profit-generating entity sitting on the property. All of this came together, and it just made sense as an opportunity that you don't very often see.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's an excellent comprehensive summary as to the projects that are going on. But you have more going on than that, but we'll touch on that on a future podcast, hopefully, George. So listen, if anyone needs any more convincing why they should follow your story, could you give us three reasons, please, George, why someone should hit that follow button on the Vox Markets website next to your company name?
Well, first of all, there is a steady news flow, and it's a regular news flow, as much because there's more than one project as because, and this would be the second reason, that there are a lot of developments expected in the pretty near future. RHA going back into production, and then the imminent release of results in terms of Zulu, the Zulu Lithium and Tantalum project. At the same time, the acquisition in Mozambique has just closed, and there will be significant news flow coming from Mozambique as well as we move that forestry side of it to start contributing to revenues and as we move into the actual exploration phase there. So I think very good reasons for continuing to look at Prem and be conscious of where we are and what's happening.
Marvellous. George, thank you very much for talking to me, and hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Good. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at five. In fact, Malky talked about them yesterday. It's Jersey Oil and Gas. JOG is a ticker. At four, Andalas Energy, ADL. At three, came up with a good RNS today, Providence Resources. I also wrote a blog about them on the weekend. PVR is ticker. At two, it was yesterday's suggested one for your watchlist, Prairie Mining, PDZ is ticker. And at number one, I think it's been number one for 3 days in a row now, it's Oxford Pharma Science, OXP. So please check it out, do some research on those companies. It's basically a measure of money flow there. Okay, here's the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. This company released news and people have hit the thumbs up. Three at joint five. It's Plutus Powergen, planning permission for a further 40 megawatts in the UK. Also joint five, Kiba Mining, MCPP update. Kiba receives final commercial bids. Also at five, Kola Gold, gold trading platform JV and strategic investment. At three, joint three as well, Alba Minerals. And that is the Amitsoq update. Also joined with Alba there is Edenville Energy, EDL, resource technical assessment and project update. At number two, Jeremy was on earlier on the podcast, Horizonte Minerals, raised a proposed 9 million, placing for the Araguay nickel project. And at number one, the most liked RNS today on the Vox Markets website was Providence Resources, PVR, letter of intent for deep water drilling unit for the 2017 Druid exploration well. PVR, and I wrote a blog on that, so have a search for that on voxmarkets.co.uk/blog and you'll find that. All right, today's suggested one for your watchlist is Clough Natural Resources, CLNR is the ticker. Harry has submitted this. Thanks, Harry, for getting involved here. What does the company do? Gas and oil exploration. How many shares does the company have an issue? 257 million. What's the current price and market cap? Current market price is 4.65 pence. Let me just check that. CLNR, because it can change. This was submitted 4.45 pence at the moment, so a little bit of a change there. Market cap is 11.45 million. Okay. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? So the losses of about £662,000 for the 6 months ended 30th of June 2016. How much cash or debt did the company have? And no debt, and they had £955,000 as stated in their interims for the 6 months ended the 30th of June 2016. There's three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. And number one, the CPR, the Competent Persons Report, a confirmed three-way closed-dip structure holds P50 of 1.2 TCF in P2248. And if you want to know what that means, then basically it's reserves there where they have a 50% confidence level of getting those out. So 1.2 TCF, quite big there. Number two, Clough returns to North Sea after 50 years and discovers historic gas reservoir. That's a headline there. That's reason number two. And number three, farm out partner to be announced soon. Centrica on the next door license. Shell looking for gas plays and the Chinese like North Sea. So there's three reasons. Clough Natural Resources, CLNR is ticker. If you know of a company you think should be on people's watch list, by all means, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. And there's a link there. Then you click the link to one of my posts there. At the bottom there is a question to say, do you know of a stock you think should be on people's watch list? If you do, click the link and fill in the form. And I could be featuring it on tomorrow's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.